Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's podcast. With us, we have Shelley Bloom, Director of Legislative Awareness and Training. And today's topic will be on healthcare reform in the 2016 election. However, before we begin, I would like to review the following with you. This podcast is designed to highlight various employee benefit matters of general interest to our listeners. It is not intended to interpret laws or regulations, or to address specific client situations. You should not act on or rely on any information contained herein without seeking the advice of an attorney or a tax professional. So let's begin today's podcast. Shelley, we have an election coming up in about a month. We've had two debates so far with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. There has been little conversation about health care. I'd like to take a closer look at what each candidate plans to do with health care. Let's start first with Hillary Clinton. Can you tell me what plans she will do if elected president?
Certainly, Jim. Thank you. She has a definite list of things that she would like to see changed. Of course, we know she's a Democrat, and so she's very supportive of what's happening so far with our health care reform. The Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, as many people call it, it has been with us since March of 2010, so a little over 6 years, and she's supportive of a lot of those things. However, she does see some changes that she'd like to make to the plan to help it to run smoother or to help more people. The first thing that she is proposing is the cost-sharing tax credit, and that would be up to $2,500 for an individual or $5,000 for a family. And what this would do is help to offset the out-of-pocket costs that people have when they're talking about the health care. So what's an out-of-pocket cost? It could be the amount that your employer asked you to contribute for your health insurance. It could be you have an individual plan through the marketplace and you still have co-pays and deductibles and co-insurance that you have to pay. So this $2,500 per person, $500 or $5,000 per family would help to offset some of those. Number two in her plan is she would like to have a reduction in the maximum premium contribution. So if you need help to pay these premiums, she wants those who are at the lower end of the income spectrum to pay less for their health insurance. And it could be as little as 2.1%. And currently the high is at 9.66%. She'd like to take that percentage down to 8.5 as a maximum. The third thing she focuses on is what she calls the family glitch. And what that means simply is that larger employers, those who have 50 or more full-time and full-time equivalent employees, are required to offer coverage that is minimum value and affordable to their employee. They are also required to offer coverage to dependents up to age 26, and most of them offer coverage to a spouse. So if an employer offers coverage that is affordable to their employee, and they're also allowed to purchase it for their spouse and dependents, even though they have to pay 100% of that cost for the spouse and the dependents, then it prohibits that spouse and dependents from going to the marketplace and looking for a tax credit or subsidy because the employer offers it. They're not allowed in most cases to get that tax credit or subsidy. And the fourth thing that she's talking about is an introduction of the public health option. This would allow the government in some way to offer coverage to people. It might be similar to what we see with Medicare, using Medicare rates and reimbursements. It might be that we have a larger network. It could be that we have a narrower network. Not so sure how that would work yet. It's not a very developed plan. But those are her four main principles, Jim.
Thank you, Shelley. Our next question. The ACA has been a costly change since it was passed in 2010. Can you tell me how her plans will impact the budget?
Yes. Her impact to the budget, because all of these are tax credits or ways that are going to expand the help that we give to people, remember that the Affordable Care Act helps people that are between 100 and 400% of the federal poverty limit, and she is looking to expand that even further. So these four policies that I just talked about are definitely going to increase the federal deficit. I've seen numbers as high as $90 billion. There will be some offsets because some of the people that get Medicaid right now would be on a different type of plan where it might be a reduction, but $90 billion is the expansion that we are looking at. Of course, it's hard to estimate what's happening here because we don't have a very well-developed plan to look at, so it's just given the information we have, we're looking at that expansion.
Okay, now to our third question. Regarding candidate Donald Trump, can you detail his plans for our nation's health care? I believe I hear the word repeal from him.
You definitely do. And in the last debate that happened, there was some conversation about health care, and he did say the word repeal. As you probably know, the Republicans hold Congress. They hold the majority both in the House and the Senate. And, of course, we have President Obama, who is a Democrat. So there have been many proposals that have come up in the House and have been voted on at the House, but they haven't made it through to the Senate because there is no veto-proof majority to override what the president would likely veto. You hear repeal often in the Republican Congress. And in fact, they voted on repeal probably more than 100 times already. So it's not unusual to hear the Republican candidate, Donald Trump, saying it's time to repeal this Affordable Care Act. And in fact, that is number one. He would like to repeal all provisions of the Affordable Care Act, which include repealing the following. He wants to take away those premium tax credits and the cost-sharing reductions that people get in the individual market. He also wants to take away the pre-existing conditions exclusion. So since we've had the Affordable Care Act, there is no question about your medical condition. In other words, you could have a very serious disease such as cancer. You could still apply for health insurance, and based solely on your age, whether or not you smoke, and where you live, they would give you a rate that you would be able to pay. He is looking at repealing that, so pre-existing conditions would be back on the table again. He's also talking about taking away that community rating, so we would again have cost of coverage based on not only age and gender, but on our health status as well. He's taking away those minimum standards for covered benefits. And in the small group market today, we have those 10 essential health benefits. And if he repeals this, those would go away. And then we're talking about taking away annual and lifetime caps on the health insurance benefits. So some pretty big changes if we talk about repealing the whole law. Some of the other things that he's looking at is allowing individuals to fully deduct the cost of their health insurance premium payments from their tax returns. Employers, in most cases, are able to do that now, and he says if employers can do it, individuals should be able to do it too. So in essence, they'll be using pre-tax dollars to purchase their individual health insurance. The third thing that he's looking at is block grants for Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program that would go directly to the states. The federal government helps with Medicaid and Children's Health Insurance Programs, or CHIP, sometimes as much as 75%. And he's talking about taking those programs and making them block grants, which means that each state would be given money and they would determine how they spend that money. Now, that tends to happen with the CHIP program, but it doesn't happen as much with Medicaid. That's still very much controlled by the federal government. And the fourth thing he'd like to do is to promote the sale of health insurance across the state lines. Typically, we have each state that makes up their own laws and rules, and when you live in that state and purchase that health care, it's all determined by that particular state law. So he's saying that why can't someone who lives in Pennsylvania be able to purchase coverage in Georgia or Nevada or California if they think it's better? There has been a lot of pushback on this already. There's been a lot of reviewing in the news saying that purchasing health care across state lines isn't the best idea, and the good example I heard is that I live here in Pennsylvania. If I purchase my health care in Texas and then something doesn't go as it should go, who's going to help me? Pennsylvania is going to be upset because I didn't purchase coverage there under their rules. I don't live in Texas, but I'm asking people that make the laws or that have the regulations in Texas to help me to get something settled. So you can see it's going to be a difficult procedure if there's some kind of a problem.
Can you predict the impact to the budget from these proposed changes?
I can. Again, these aren't very well developed, so these are purely estimates, but the estimates that I'm seeing is that all of his proposals would be an increase of about $33.1 billion by 2018. We are electing these people. They would take office in 2017. It would take them a little bit of time to allow their proposals to develop and be voted on. So we're looking at about $33 billion. That could impact if all of the Trump proposals become law if he were to be elected president.
Our last question. Election Day is November 8th. How does Congress impact these proposals?
Good question, Jim. And as I said, today we have a Republican House, we have a Republican Senate, and we have a Democrat that's in the White House. So it's been very difficult to look at changes that could be made to the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, and to get them through the House is fairly easy. The Senate may want to take those up, but they have a simple majority, not enough of a majority to override any of the president's vetoes. If we were to elect a Democratic president, but we still maintained a Republican House and/or a Republican Senate, then again, you can see some discord there where the House, if they move to be Democratic, they may send something over to the Republicans in the Senate who say no. What a more likely proposal is that the House is going to stay Republican. The Senate has, as reported today, a better chance of moving back to Democratic control. But again, you've got House Republicans that want laws that the House that the Senate Democrats don't want, and depending on who we have sitting in as president, we could have a very difficult time in getting more of these laws passed. So there's a lot riding on this election. It's very important for everyone to pay close attention to not only what's happening with president, but what's happening with congressmen that everyone is going to be voting on, members of the House. And if you have a Senate election that you need to vote on, then you need to make sure that you're looking at what that proposed senator stands for and what do you want to see happen.
Thank you, Shelley. That was excellent.
Thank you, Jim.
At this time, we are going to conclude our podcast. Thank you, everyone.